This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Latest news spreads the threat to this heart of mine. Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant brought the demon plague.
In Fukushima, Japan, we passed another week out of eternity. Quakes rocked the damaged reactors at the accident now rated level 7 like Chernobyl. The evacuation zone was expanded, massive radiation admitted, and found in milk from Hawaii through California to Vermont and even Europe. I'm Alex Smith. This week on Radio EcoShock, we dig to find you the news not heard in Japan, North America, Australia, and all over the world. We start out with the American nuclear expert, industry insider, and whistleblower Arne Gundersen, with a detailed investigation of each reactor. Where is the plutonium coming from? Where is it going? Where is panic the only appropriate emotion? Later, we'll chat with California activist Ace Hoffman, who told us this was coming and worries about his own local reactors. All through, you'll get news from Japan and the world media from the epicenter of a nuclear sore that will ooze radioactivity for centuries. Fukushima, the name we never knew, the name we can never forget.
Radio EcoShock.
Arne Gundersen is an industry insider, a former executive in the U.S. nuclear power industry. He's a whistleblower on the safety of American nuke plants from the oldies like Vermont Yankee to the new designs by Westinghouse. As Fukushima reactor buildings blew up in Japan, Arne Gundersen's insider sources and his experience added up to a series of devastating videos on his site at Fairwinds Associates. He's been on CNN, BBC, CBC, and likely that's just today. So, Arne, thank you so much for talking with us on Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad I could come.
I admire the way you patiently explain tricky nuclear information the rest of us do need to know. Why do you do it?
I was a teacher. I was a nuclear engineer and then a senior vice president, and when I blew the whistle, I was fired and sued for $1.5 million. And in the process, I became a school teacher, and I sort of combined engineering skills, and I learned how to teach. So it seems to be a natural way to go. So now that I'm back consulting full-time, I find myself gravitating to teaching as well, and this gives me that opportunity.
Well, it really shows. I do have so many questions. Let's start out with Reactor 1. The utility TEPCO and the government admit part of the fuel rods have been exposed out of water, probably for weeks. David Lochbaum from the Union of Concerned Scientists suggested they can't get water into that inner shroud. And on Monday, April 10th, the Japanese government said nitrogen that's being pumped in isn't staying inside the reactor, and so radioactive gas was leaking out. Talk to us about what is going on in Fukushima Daiichi Reactor 1.
Reactor 1, I guess the most recent thing is that when the nitrogen started leaking out, that wasn't a concern for me as far as I thought it would leak out of the reactor, but apparently it's leaking out of the containment. And the industry's position has always been that these containments can't fail. And so not only do we have Unit 2 failed, and we'll get to that later, but here's Unit 1 unable to hold nitrogen gas inside. The core temperatures in Unit 1 are the highest. They're over 210°C, or close to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. And of all the reactors on site, it is the hottest. So I would agree with Dave Lochbaum at UCS that that's an indication that there's a lot of blockage in that core, and it still has difficulty cooling.
Is there still a potential for a meltdown at Reactor 1?
Yes. Let me tell you why. The temperature at the feed water nozzles is 400 degrees F or 210°C. But the relief valves are open. And what that means is that the vessel has air in it, because water can't exist at 400 degrees F and atmospheric pressure. So that tells me that the core is not being cooled. It's the smallest reactor. It only had 500 megawatts. The others were over 700. But the core damage plus the temperatures at the feed water nozzles lead me to be concerned. That the last piece there is that they have been able to flood the outside of the vessel. And while they can't cool it from the inside, it's like they're putting water on the outside of the pressure cooker. And I think the only reason we don't have a meltdown in Unit 1 is that the heat is being removed through the pressure cooker, through the vessel itself, because it's certainly not moving around inside.
Now, even as the government announced a Level 7 event at Fukushima, they continue to say the worst radiation occurred in the first few days, up to March 15th, say, due to multiple hydrogen explosions and damage to Reactor Number 2. A month later, what can you tell us about Reactor 2?
Reactor 2 is in the worst shape. There's clearly a hole in the bottom of it. Now, there might still be nuclear fuel in the core, and I'm not suggesting that all of the nuclear fuel poured out the hole, but the reactor temperatures are such that there's no indication of water in the bottom of that reactor. On top of that, they had an explosion, but not the dramatic explosion. If you look at Unit 2, it looks like it's the best, but in fact, they had an explosion in the containment, which broke there's that torus down at the bottom and a toroidal structure, and there's a break there. So they're putting water in at the top of the vessel, it's running out the bottom of the vessel, and it's running out a crack in the containment. That seems to be what's causing the most contamination in those trenches and the ocean. But essentially, they're pouring ocean water, or now pure water, directly on top of fuel pellets, and that's carrying radiation out of the plant. Of all of the units, I think I could give you thoughts on how to fix everything at 1 and everything at 3, but boy, I'll tell you, Unit 2 is a really hard nut to crack.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with nuclear expert Arne Gunderson. I have a number of reports that Fukushima Reactor Number 3 has been so radioactive workers cannot even approach it to restore anything. Mary Olson from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service says photos show the spent fuel pool for Reactor Number 3 is gone. How serious is that situation at Reactor 3?
The reactor itself has the temperatures, the best temperatures. It's very close to boiling, so it's probably the coolest of the three reactors. But I would agree with Mary that I have looked at the high-level photographs, and there's a little tiny hole where the fuel pool should be, and there are some vapors coming out of it. But it looks to me like half the fuel pool is gone. And there are also some infrared pictures out on the net, and they do show a heat source inside that little hole. What I think happened is Unit 3 had the most violent explosion, and the plume went up at least 2,000 feet, close to a kilometer, but in any event, quite high. Yet the containment remained intact, and it was a direct upward shooting plume. And to me, that indicates that the fuel pool itself filled with hydrogen, and that behaved like a gun barrel. That aimed the blast upward. That would account for the fact that large pieces of nuclear fuel rods have been found as far away from the reactor as a mile and even 2 miles. So we're talking, three kilometers out, they're finding pieces of nuclear fuel rods. The most likely source of that is Unit 3. And then, so if you look at the pictures of those units side by side, it seems like it's about one floor shorter than Unit 4 due to the violence of that explosion. I'm not saying that all of the fuel is gone from that pool, because the infrared pictures do indicate a heat source. But I have my doubts about how much fuel remains in there and how much was thrown out. The bigger problem is, and I think this is the source term of radiation that concerns me the most, is volatilized heavy elements like plutonium. That explosion was so violent, and it clearly did involve the fuel pool, that I would suspect that some plutonium, I don't know how much, became a volatile gas, And, of course, that's very carcinogenic. So that's a concern of mine.
And wasn't that Reactor 3 burning the advanced MOX fuel that was laced with plutonium?
Yeah, it had 6% of its fuel was MOX. But all of the reactors, you know, once a reactor starts to run, the U-238 converts over to plutonium. So all of them have plutonium. Unit 3 had a little bit more plutonium to start, but really, in the big scheme of things, they all are conceivable sources of plutonium.
All right. Well, Arnie, we know Reactor 4 wasn't operating at the time of the earthquake and tsunami. Most of the media reported fires there, with the fire department responding, but Chief Cabinet Secretary Yukio Edano said Reactor 4, the fuel pond, exploded, just as you described for Reactor number 3. We seem to have a YouTube video of it. I'm wondering if that Reactor 4 explosion ranks that up there with one of the most serious early events at Fukushima.
It is. It is. The only thing it didn't release is iodine, because iodine has a short half-life, 8 days. And, of course, the fuel had been removed from the core about 4 or 5 months ago. So when the fuel pool cracked, and this is important, according to Areva, the French nuclear vendor, the fuel pool developed a crack in it during the earthquake. So the water ran out of the fuel pool before the tsunami, and it didn't boil dry, it ran dry. So from an engineering standpoint, that indicates a real concern about seismic calculations on a structure of this magnitude. But the pool was dry, and there clearly was what we call a Zirk water reaction. The Zirk alloy absorbs an oxygen molecule from water and then creates hydrogen, which blew up to Unit 4. And if you... I'm going to go over to my website now. If you go up on our website, there's a picture. They put a camera on the end of the device that was spraying water into Unit 4. And one of my jobs when I was in the industry is I ran a business that built nuclear fuel racks for Mark I Designs. And you can clearly see in about 4 seconds of the video clip that the fuel racks are in the pool, but the water is not in the pool. So the whatever fuel is in the fuel racks, at least the top, is dry. So they can easily reach the ignition point of the Zirk water reaction, which is 2,200 degrees, and produce the hydrogen that we saw.
Arnie, I feel a little bit conned when officials just release figures for fast decay items like 131. And you mentioned uranium and possibly plutonium, and uranium-234 and 238 was detected in samples taken by the EPA in Hawaii, Southern California, and Seattle on April 6th. However, they say that those, well, quote, analysis of this batch of filter data identified low levels of uranium consistent with natural levels typically seen in the U.S., end quote. But other locations don't show up with uranium at all, just Hawaii and the West Coast, and they're not known as radioactive hotspots. Japan announced a few traces of plutonium only, and then later Kyoto on April 12th reported radioactive strontium detected more than 30 kilometers from the plant. Do you think that the most radioactive elements like strontium, uranium, and plutonium could be loose in the Japanese countryside with no warning from the government?
Yes. I think they can be loose on the North American continent, too. I'm counting on the independent scientists at universities to give us better numbers. I'm not convinced that either the Japanese government nor the American EPA is going to give us the best data. You know, I was an expert on Three Mile Island, and I saw this back in the 70s, where the government and the industry kind of circled the wagons and came up with a story that, when they controlled the data, it was very hard to refute. And the same thing happened on Chernobyl, of course, except it was so much more violent that it was pretty clear it was a world-class event. But again, the government and the industry begin to control the data. We live in a different era now, and I'm hoping that the independent labs on the and sharing information over the Internet can break through the logjam that the industry is trying to create and give us really some good science here.
And Arnie, if I understand what you've told us so far correctly, there's still a chance of more explosions or events which could spew more radioactivity reaching the Western Hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere?
Yes. My concern with Unit 1 is that it's very heavy now. They've added all this water on the outside, and if there's an aftershock, a sizable aftershock, you know, 7, 7.5, it could break Unit 1's containment. And that would then again begin the process because, again, Unit 1 is not being cooled from the inside. It's being cooled from the outside. And Unit 1 also had the hottest fuel, physically hottest fuel. Unit 2 continues to leak, and I think that problem is going to be the greatest source of liquid radioactive waste. I read today that there's 60,000 tons of liquid radioactive waste on site. And the Russians are coming with a special ship to process radioactive waste, and they can process 35 tons a day. Well, if you do the math, it'll be 5 years before this special ship processes all the waste if they don't generate any more. So they're going to run into problems with liquid waste and what to do with it on Unit 2. Unit 3, the reactor itself is probably the closest to being cool and under control. But as we said, the fuel pool is severely damaged and the contamination on the outside surfaces is extensive. So with the exception of probably being able to cool the reactor, it will be difficult to recover it. My biggest concern is a fire in Unit 4, a fuel pool fire in Unit 4, because I know the fuel is exposed. I've seen it on the videos. And if you volatilize plutonium in those quantities, you can expect, you know, serious health consequences in Japan, but also in North America. So that's my biggest concern right now.
And as you've mentioned, people bringing in equipment, they're also flying in two giant cement pouring trucks. Do you think that those could be used to bury the problem like Chernobyl?
I think they're going to try. They've actually modified those pumps to pump water. And they're going to try to push a lot of water into these reactors. My concern with that is that if they hit the pool in Unit 3 or the pool in Unit 4 with water and the fuel is hot, they may in fact create the Zirk water reaction and cause another explosion. The other thing is, I told you I built fuel racks before, and if they hit the rack with too much pressure, they can distort the elements so that they become closer together. And you can actually get a chain reaction again occurring because the geometry of the rack has changed and the elements become critical again. So too much water in Units 3 and 4 could actually cause an inadvertent criticality, and that would not be a good thing.
Do you think, Arnie Gunderson, we should be closing old reactors in the United States?
Well, my position is on these. After Three Mile Island, the NRC went back and they said, look, for 90 days, we're going to shut down these B&W reactors, and we're going to look to see if there's any kind of a problem here that runs across the board. And this is the time of year to do it. And, of course, Three Mile Island occurred at the same time of year in March because, you know, in North America, there's a lull. There's a high peak in the winter and a high peak in the summer for electric use. But in the spring, there's not much electric use. So we could shut down our Mark I reactors for 90 days and look hard at the Fukushima data and see if there's any substantial problems. And if there are, of course, you'd want to shut them down. And if there's not, you wouldn't miss it because there's more than enough power on the grid. My position on a few reactors is more stringent than that. I think we've got a couple of these Mark I reactors do have a Fukushima-like flaw, a single point of vulnerability. It's not to a tsunami or an earthquake, but they do have an engineered feature that everybody knows about, that if one component fails, you will get a Fukushima event. You'll be unable to cool the core. The NRC is aware of that and hasn't asked for those half dozen reactors to shut down. And that's a concern of mine.
Could you mention just the names of a couple of those?
Yeah, well, the problem is called the net positive suction head, and it's also called a containment overpressure credit. And Vermont Yankee, Robinson, Dresden, and Quad Cities all use that overpressure credit, which basically means that they need the containment pressure to push water to the emergency pumps. And if there's a flaw in the containment, not a major crack, but a flaw, and the containment can't push water to the pumps will fail. And the NRC knowingly violated its own regulations in allowing these plants to be increased in power. Before they had their power uprates, they didn't need this containment overpressure. But in order to make more money and more power, the NRC just waived its own regulations and allowed them to assume that the containment wouldn't fail. And I don't think that's a good assumption. Before Fukushima, it wasn't a good assumption. And now after Fukushima, it's obviously not.
As we wrap up, is there something that I've missed that you would like our listeners to know?
What I am asking the NRC to do is, don't shut down the industry or anything like that, but this is a time to pause and reflect about we don't need to go headlong into continuing to license plants right now. We can take a pause and not renew licenses for 20 years when we don't know what happened with Fukushima, and not give power increases until we know what happened to Fukushima, and also with the new ones. We've got this AP1000 design, and it has a glaring single point of failure in this in its design. And I think the NRC has assumed these problems will not occur. And I've literally argued with the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards and said they have told me there is zero probability of a containment leak. Well, Fukushima 1, 2, and 3 clearly have leaked, and the so the NRC's argument, I think, was wrong even before that. But in light of Fukushima, I think we need to go back and look across the board for these single points of vulnerability.
You've heard it. Some real safety tips. Find our guest, Arne Gunderson, at fairwinds.com. Just add an E to the end of fair to find that. Or Google Arne Gunderson and look for his powerful videos on YouTube. You'll be a lot smarter when it comes to the real risk of nuclear plants near you. Arne, on behalf of everyone looking for straight answers, I want to thank you.
Thank you. I had fun.
I'm Alex Smith. Find us at ecoshock.org.
Latest news spreads the threat.
Now I'm going to run your head through the media meat grinder, Hacking Fukushima. Along the way, we explore some issues raised in our Radio EcoShock interview with Arne Gunderson. First of all, the contest. The prize for the biggest whitewash from a Western reporter goes to... No, not George Monbiot, but longtime BBC science correspondent Palap Ghosh. He tells us Fukushima is nothing like Chernobyl and was only upgraded because of technicalities in the international scale, as Palap and his longtime employer, the BBC, take up in this analysis.
Now, the situation in Fukushima is nothing like the same, so why has it been upgraded? Well, it's because the technicalities of the international scale suggest that if an incident requires long-term remedial action, then it has to be regarded as severed, and also if there are human health consequences as well.
And what are the human health consequences now? I mean, are they worse than previously thought? Is it spread further? I mean, we had the exclusion zone being widened yesterday.
Well, that's the point, that the levels of radiation are relatively low, especially compared to Chernobyl. It's just on a technical point that it has been raised to 7. I think what a lot of people have been saying is that this reveals the inadequacy of this system that is supposed to be like the magnitude scale for earthquakes. It's supposed to provide clarity for public so they can understand how serious a nuclear incident
is. But people living in the area, are they at short-term, long-term, any risk of cancer, of health risks from the food, from the water?
Well, at the moment, the levels of radiation are low, so there's very little, if any, risk to the people living in the area.
Gosh, indeed. Very little risk to any people living in the area. Perhaps that's why they're evacuated and will never return home. Most of the radiation that you have received flooded out from Japan in the first 4 days of the accident. More is coming daily, and as Arne Gundersen warned, we could still get an even bigger dose. Don't ever forget, though, what happened at Reactor 4. I want to briefly take you back to March 14th in Japan, 3 days after the quake struck. Here is Russia Today.
And keeping our focus on the news out of Japan. And all 6 reactors at the Fukushima power plant have now been affected by the ongoing crisis there. The last 2 are said to be losing their cooling capabilities. And it's this exact problem that's caused all the blasts at the site so far, following the devastating quake and tsunami. Also, a pool of spent nuke fuel at the station is said to have reached boiling point. It's stoking fears of a nuclear meltdown, which were already high since the reactor explosions began. Japan has reportedly now told the International Atomic Energy Agency that the facility is releasing radioactive materials into the air. Engineers have been using seawater to cool the reactors in an attempt to avert a nuclear meltdown. Now, RT's Ivor Bennett can join us live from about 100 kilometres from the station itself. And hi, Ivor. Are we talking about a situation that's now become truly dire? We're not hearing any good news at this point.
It seemed like that way. The radiation levels following the 4th explosion earlier today, second explosion of the day, 4th explosion at the nuclear power plant, they topped 400 times the dosage one would expect to receive in a year, which is a very critical and harmful level indeed. So the situation is very tense here, and all this follows the events of today, which seem to have just gone from bad to worse. 2 explosions this morning at 2 previously intact reactors, and then 2 more, the final 2 reactors of the 6 at the Fukushima power plant we're hearing this evening have now gone into a critical condition. There haven't been any explosions there, but they have also had their cooling mechanisms knocked out, so they can't cool down the reactors, and that's what led to the first 2 explosions, first on Saturday and the one yesterday. Now, the situation suddenly got a whole lot more critical. It went up a couple of notches with the second explosion today, because that 4th reactor actually houses 780 spent fuel rods, all of which containing radioactive material. Normally, a nuclear reactor actually contains around 70 fuel rods, so there was a lot more potential, a lot greater potential for a much larger radiation leak. And this prompted fears of a major nuclear catastrophe and potential nuclear meltdown, also fueled by the Prime Minister's address to the nation, telling people to stay indoors. Even there's advice coming from the government now to even hang your laundry indoors, because they don't want anyone going outside at all. And this prompted foreign news crews, all the ones I've seen today, head for the exits. I'm now actually in Niigata, which is on the west coast, because...
On the same day, a Russia Today reporter calls in about the number 4 spent fuel pond, which I suspect is one of the major sources of contamination of Japan, North America, and the Northern Hemisphere.
And now we can go live to Japan, and our correspondent Ivor Bennett is there for us. Hello there, Ivor. So radiation levels have risen both inside and outside the plant. How bad is the situation, and what's the risk of nuclear disaster now, and what's being done to try and prevent it?
The situation now is very critical indeed. There's a very realistic threat of a nuclear meltdown now. That's according to the Prime Minister, Naoto Kan. He's just come out and addressed the nation, warning people... previously intact reactors. The second one, actually, one reactor that wasn't even turned on. It had been shut down at the time of the earthquake, and we now could be on the verge of a major nuclear catastrophe. We know radiation has leaked there have been serious radiation leaks at both reactors. The radiation levels are 400 maximum level that's normally absorbed in 1 year. Previously, after the first explosion this morning, those levels were 8 times. So just in the last few moments, they've shot up.
Here's a clip from NHK World Japanese Television, March 14th.
Chief Cabinet Secretary Yukio Erano says the fire at the 4th reactor of the Fukushima No. 1 plant may have caused the increase in radioactivity around the plant. Erano said the number 4 reactor was not operating when the quake struck, and that nuclear fuel rods does not ignite by itself. He said spent nuclear fuel stored inside the reactor probably got hot and generated hydrogen, which exploded. He said the number 4 reactor is no longer contained by a building, and the fire must be put out to stop the release of radioactive materials.
And finally, the next day, with the fire still raging at the Reactor 4 spent fuel pond, on the 15th, along with an open-to-the-sky bonfire of the spent fuel of Reactor 3 next door.
Now, at the stricken Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, Japanese police will try spraying water from outside the quake-crippled reactor building to cool down its storage pool for nuclear fuel. The task force says it's crucial to restore the cooling systems as soon as possible to stop the radioactive leakage. An explosion occurred at the number 4 reactor building on Tuesday. Japan's Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency cites a possible hydrogen explosion. The pool for spent nuclear fuel in the building is more likely to heat up since it contains a larger number of rods than usual, a full bundle. Work had previously been underway there to renovate the equipment for the reactor. A government task force dealing with the nuclear crisis says if these conditions should continue, fuel rods would likely be exposed above the water surface and be damaged. This could release a massive amount of radiation into the atmosphere. The task force says a Tokyo police riot squad will dispatch water cannon trucks to spray water into the pools on Thursday morning. On Wednesday, white plumes were seen rising from near the number 3 reactor building at the Fukushima Daiichi plant. Tokyo Electric Power Company says water in a storage pool for spent fuel evaporated to form the vapor, as a cooling system there has not been working since the quake. In the number 5 and 6 reactor buildings, temperatures of the storage pools are also rising. The two reactors were not operating as scheduled inspections were taking place when the quake struck. The power company says these pools should also be cooled down to prevent them from developing into a serious problem.
There are repeated stories that raw fuel rods littered the reactor plant site, preventing human access to at least the Reactor 3 building, with an almost eerie silence about what was going on in Reactor 4. Here is just one story from the pile, NHK World, April 9th, when areas of the plant could not be reached by anything human.
Over to Japan now, where new pictures have emerged of tsunami waves hitting the Fukushima nuclear power station last month. Its operators are about to fly an unmanned helicopter over the reactors to see how badly damaged they are. Well, let's cross now to our correspondent Margot Ortigas, who joins us now live from Mizusawa. Margot, good to have you with us. Just bring us up to speed on the situation of the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant.
As you mentioned, indeed, work continues, and that unmanned helicopter is going to help them see exactly how bad the extent of the damage is in the hard-to-reach places, as there are still places that the workers haven't been able to physically get to for fear of being exposed to higher levels of radiation. But aside from that unmanned chopper, they are also expecting to get any day now, it's already on its way, two huge pumps that are being delivered here by a Russian cargo jet from the United States. They're about 86,000 kilos in weight, and they're meant to be able to pour large amounts of water in one go from very far distances to the areas, again, of the plant that have as yet been difficult to reach. And it should make the effort to try to cool the nuclear reactors a little easier on the workers. But aside from that, there is also still the problem of storing all the contaminated water after it's been poured onto those nuclear reactors. And there is a huge floating storage vessel that is also on its way to Fukushima as we speak. It's being refitted already, as we understand, at the Yokohama port.
Now, on the subject of deaths and injuries, three people are admitted dead. Two of the bodies were missing for over 2 weeks and finally retrieved from a reactor building, or was it a tunnel? TEPCO and the government say they died in the tsunami or earthquake. Of course, their bodies were highly radioactive. Do we have to take the authorities' word for how they died? About 29 others were injured, some of them due to radioactivity. At least a dozen people at Fukushima received, at a minimum, a lifetime dose of radiation, although we are not told how much. Let's listen to this informative report from NHK World, April 11th. We also learn an emergency response crew was cut off from Tokyo at the start of the accident, plus the Japanese TV saying massive amounts of radiation have been released.
Not everything is the same as the accident in Chernobyl. There are differences. For example, there was an explosion at Chernobyl, but it was an explosion at the reactor itself. It destroyed the building, and also it led to the release of large amounts of radioactive material into the atmosphere. The information about the accident was not communicated to the residents for a while and damage spread. There was also an explosion at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. However, the reactor, the containment vessel, and the concrete building still remains. So it is not like the Chernobyl accident where the whole building was destroyed and a large amount of radiation was spread out into the atmosphere.
People living in the expanded evacuation area are to be asked to leave their homes within a month or so. Edano said the amount of annual radiation exposure in the zone could exceed 20 millisieverts. The annual safety standard set by some international organizations is 20 to 100 millisieverts. The Japanese government says the radiation accumulated over a 25-day period at some locations in Fukushima Prefecture has exceeded the permissible level set for a full year. The government announced the findings on Monday. The calculation is based on data collected from 53 locations up to 60 kilometers from the Fukushima Daiichi power plant from the day following the March 11th disasters through April 5th. 34 millisieverts of radiation had accumulated over that period at one location in Namie town, about 24 kilometers northwest of the plant. This equates to about 314 millisieverts per year, more than three times the permissible level of 100 millisieverts.
And last week on Friday, there was a question raised during a news conference about the nuclear power plant's injuries, about the management of radiation of the workers there. So now I would like to report on that. In the nuclear power plant, about injuries or deaths there, as of April 10th, there were three deaths that occurred on the day of the earthquake. Two were missing at the point of the earthquake, and they were later found dead as a result of the tsunami later on. And at the Fukushima Daini power plant, one person died as a result of being crushed under a crane that collapsed. So these are the three deaths related to the nuclear power plants. So I would like to extend my condolences to those deaths as well. As for injuries, as of April 10th, 29 people have been injured. TEPCO workers, 12 of them at Fukushima Daiichi and two at Fukushima Daini, altogether 14. And six of them were injured right after the earthquake, meaning that the eight have been injured in the following recovery operations. And 11 at Fukushima Daiichi, one at the time of the earthquake, meaning that 10 were injured in the recovery efforts. As of the SCF, four people were injured. And lastly, the radiation management situation.
Similarly, as of the 10th of April, those people that were exceeded 1,000 millisieverts, 18 of the TEPCO, and three people of the affiliated companies, and therefore that there are 21 people are exposed more than 1,000 millisieverts. And 250 millisievert is at the level limit of the current workers that are engaged in millisieverts. 21 exceeding 1,000, and those people that who are exceeding 250, none.
Now, Japan's Nuclear Safety Agency will raise the crisis level at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant from 5 to 7, the worst on the international scale. The Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency made the decision on Monday. It says the damaged facility has been releasing a massive amount of radioactive substances, which is a threat to human health and the environment over a wide area.
Despite those published reports of injuries, the head of NISA, the Nuclear Information and Safety Agency in Japan, says there has been no direct impact on human health. What an incredible statement, as hundreds of thousands of Japanese have been irradiated by radioactive food, water, or directly through the air, with known consequences for the future. NHK World, quoting the head of NISA as he explains away the disasters being much less than Chernobyl, and he makes this historic statement on April 12th.
Welcome to Newsline. I'm Michio Kijima in Tokyo with the news at this hour. The Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency said on Tuesday that the damaged plant released a massive amount of radioactive material, but it is one-tenth of the volume released in the Chernobyl accident. Japan's Nuclear Safety Commission said much of the radiation was released during the 2 days after the suppression pool connected to the number two reactor began showing problems at 6 a.m. on March 15th. The commission said that the radiation is still escaping from the plant and the amount is rising marginally, but the volume has dropped considerably since the crisis began.
Unlike Chernobyl, we have been able to come this far without causing any direct harm to human health. The nuclear accident itself is very large, but we will continue our efforts to resolve the situation, giving top priority to keep people safe from health hazards.
But we are speaking about a problem that will last us the rest of the century. Sean Burney, an independent nuclear consultant from Scotland, told Russia Today TV on April 4th, 25 years after Chernobyl, they're still struggling with contamination on the site and the threat of further releases. Fukushima is three reactors and many, many more tons of spent fuel than is contained in Chernobyl.
And choose Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. Did it to you too.
So this is an issue we're going to be talking about probably for the rest of the century and beyond. End quote from Sean Burney. In another paper, Thinking the Unthinkable, Japanese Nuclear Power and Proliferation in East Asia, Sean and co-author Frank Barnaby suggest Japan has used its nuclear power industry to create all the necessary materials for a nuclear bomb that could be made very quickly. Japan is, they suggest, a de facto nuclear state, which would not be surprising considering North Korea has threatened to send a nuclear missile to Japan while testing just such a missile in the Sea of Japan, and think of all the possible threats from China or even Russia. Find that link in my blog and a link to an even greater conspiracy theory to use this nuclear disaster to unseat Prime Minister Naoto Kan and reseat the former Liberal Party who created the nuclear system. The article by Yuichi Shimatsu, published at globalresearch.ca, is wild but still plausible. Published April 13th, the title is Secret Weapons Program Inside Fukushima Nuclear Plant? U.S.-Japan Security Treaty Fatally Delayed Nuclear Workers' Fight Against Meltdown. Like most people so far in Fukushima, I no longer know what is true. These internal struggles may explain the constant contradictions in the media from various agencies in TEPCO. For example, that Level 7 announcement was announced and then withdrawn and then announced again. See my blog link at ecoshock.info for the related April 11th story, TEPCO Tardy on End Plant Emergency, by Yomiuri Shinbun, the Japanese newspaper. In it, the Japanese Prime Minister was reportedly unable to control TEPCO, the nuclear utility owner of Fukushima. The utility company delay may have caused the first hydrogen explosion at Reactor 1, but TEPCO later blamed the Prime Minister himself, saying they had to wait for his flyover. It sounds like atomic court intrigue, a battle royal behind the scenes in Japan with impacts on the unfolding disaster, the people of Japan, and all of us. And there's another kind of conspiracy swirling around the damaged planet. Nuclear industrial titans with their political allies in tow, nations and campaign contributions, they want the new nuclear renaissance, gazillions of dollars to clean up the mess they made. The partnership that built Fukushima, Hitachi and General Electric, have sent in a plan to dismantle Fukushima 1. Their partners are the usual suspects: American nuke giant Exelon, Obama's campaign funder, and mega project specialist Bechtel Corp. The prize? More than ₥1 trillion, at least $12 billion, with another $20 or $30 billion in cost overruns, I suggest, in a new super contract lasting decades, disaster capitalism at its best. I doubt if any of these companies will still be there in decades. Maybe that is one of the reasons why CEO Jeff Immelt went to Japan after the accident. Was he doing some deals? The first foreign dignitary guest was French President Sarkozy. Is it coincidence his national company Areva is hooking up with nuclear supplier Toshiba to put in a rival bid for this endless pot of gold? Read all about it in the article, Hitachi GE Submit Plan to Dismantle Fukushima Nuclear Plant, by Mariko Yasu and Maki Shiraki in Bloomberg, April 12th. If we can't make money building them, we'll profit from the disaster. On Monday 11th, three new earthquakes rattled Japan again, some of them serious. TEPCO reported power was cut and cooling stopped at Fukushima for 50 minutes. One spokesman, Mr. Iguchi, told the Wall Street Journal there was a high risk of flare-up. Temperatures and pressure levels in Reactor 1 remain high. Two-thirds of the fuel core is exposed to air with no cooling. Iguchi said, quote, "There could easily be more melting of the core," end quote. In the newspaper Japan Today, April 12th, a TEPCO official said, quote, "The radiation leak has not stopped completely, and our concern is that the amount of leakage could eventually reach that of Chernobyl or exceed it." Here's a brief USA update. In California, one of the worst and most prone quake plants, the Diablo Canyon reactors featured 2 weeks ago on Radio EcoShock, have withdrawn their application for relicensing. The owner, PG&E, has finally given in to public demands for new seismic risk testing. Fukushima did what years of court battles and protests could not. To get more news about the impact on the United States, visit the blog of NewsHound Alexander Higgins. He discovered EPA charts showing milk samples in Hawaii 800% above the federal limits for cesium-134 in drinking water. It's just below the federal drinking water limit in milk found in Los Angeles and shows up as far away as dairy cows in Montpelier, Vermont and Spokane, Washington. Find that at blog.alexanderhiggins.com. He has links to the original EPA charts and many other radioactive rabbit holes. This week's worst reactor of the week has to be San Onofre in Southern California. It's right on two earthquake fault lines and right down by the sea, waiting to be swept away by a tsunami. We get more from the surfer's friend, longtime anti-nuke and media activist, Ace Hoffman. Can you just tell me about the weather for a second while I set your sound levels?
Okay, well, the weather here is nice and sunny, actually, with a slight chance of cesium.
I wish you hadn't said that. Our guest from California has been warning of a Fukushima-type disaster for, well, too long. Ace Hoffman, when did you start putting out nuclear warnings?
Oh, gee, around Three Mile Island, I sent out something. I sent out a comedy routine to Dr. Demento, which was again played last Saturday.
What sort of comedy could you find out of Three Mile Island?
There wasn't much, but there were a lot of statements that were contradictory, that were minimalizations of what was really going on.
Well, that's exactly what's happening now. I mean, look, there was one plant in northern Japan, not the famous Fukushima one, another one, and they were hit by an earthquake again. The power went out again, and when they went to start up their backup reactors, two of them were out for service. Well, who knew that you'd need those a month after one of the worst nuclear disasters? And the third one starts springing an oil leak and didn't work either. So, you know, a month, it sounds like the clowns are running the scene there. I just don't know what to think.
I think, how are they doing it at my local nuclear power plant? Because that's really the question everyone should be asking.
And what is your local plant?
My local plant is San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station, where they're doing everything wrong, just like they are at Fukushima. They're rated the lowest, the worst in terms of manpower. I forget the exact wording, but their manpower, morale, their willingness to bring forward problems because they're afraid of retaliation from management. Every problem like that they've got. They've got, you know, fudging the records, not making the records, not making the rounds. Everything they can do wrong, they do wrong. They've been lucky, I guess, because we haven't had a meltdown here, but one could start tomorrow.
Now, the tsunami that hit the Fukushima reactors was 15 meters. That's about 48 feet high. So how would the San Onofre nuclear plant in Southern California handle that one?
The LA Times says that the seawall is 25 feet high. The reactor owners are saying it's 30 feet high. So either one, we're pretty well sunk. And don't forget that the height of the wave, one wave piles up on top of another. So you could have 60, 70, 80 feet worth of water from 45-foot waves.
Well, so the U.S. has a nuclear safety strategy just about the same as Japan, namely, we'll run these old reactors as long as we can until something really bad happens. Is that the plan?
That's exactly the plan. I can't find any flaw in your analysis. Every reactor that has wanted a license has gotten one. The only times they don't give licenses is when the reactors decide that they're not able to operate at a cost-effective manner. Then they don't apply for a license, and then they get shut down. And so a few dozen reactors have been shut down in America. But no reactor that wants to stay open because they're making money hand over fist has been shut down because it's ridiculous and dangerous, and why would anyone do a thing like this? I mean, if that were the criteria, all of the Mark I BWRs would surely have been shut down in the last month. Isn't there anything? I mean, what limit is there?
Well, I don't know. Let's say 19 out of 20 blow up. Would we close the 20th one?
Well, that's certainly a hypothetical.
Maybe not. We've just seen three or four blow up in Japan.
I don't know if we'll get that far without having shut down. I do think it's interesting that Germany has decided to close all their nuke plants in 8 years, I think it is. And eight of them, or seven, they closed right away, and they may never reopen those after Fukushima. So they seem to have a much more logical plan than the rest of us. And it's still, in my opinion, not good enough. But I do wonder how much of it was because if they didn't do that, they were already having hundreds of thousands of people protesting nuclear power. And it was just, it's hopeless in that country. In America, and I don't know how bad it is in Canada, but here, apathy is the, you know, it's going to win out over every attempt any activist has made. For the last 50 years, apathy has won out. It's not going to change.
Well, hear me out. I think I've got an idea for a possible protest here. I think what we need to do is to start cooling down San Onofre and that other earthquake baby, the Diablo Canyon reactors. We should start cooling them down with water right now, so we'll be ahead of the game when the accident happens. So I was thinking if we could get a fireboat or some kind of pump and hose going on San Onofre. I guess the Coast Guard would shoo you away, but maybe we could get all those kids with those fancy water guns, you know, out there coming to the reactor to spray it down. It's their future, their chromosomes, you know. What do you think?
Well, it's pretty much being sprayed down constantly. Millions of gallons every minute are run through these reactors, and the water comes out slightly radioactive. What happened at Fukushima was that they stopped cooling the reactors down because they ran out of power and they couldn't restart the equipment because it had gotten flooded out, and one thing after another, the batteries went dead. Next thing you know, the residual heat that is constantly being produced in the reactor, once you've gone critical, melted the reactor down. So right now we have reactors that are going critical. They're just not doing so excessively, but they're in a constant state of criticality, and they're producing enormous amounts of heat, and they're being cooled by enormous amounts of water. All it takes is a little change in the equation, and suddenly you've got Fukushima here.
Well, you know, we've got a great early warning system. Here in Canada, the government announced that it would not test the milk, even though they found radioactivity in milk, but they weren't going to test it. And, well, RadNet in the States from the EPA, it only took about a month for them to release the fact that they found some uranium-234 and all sorts of other nasty things in small amounts, they say. No harm, no harm. In the States, how do you like your early warning system? Does it make you feel comfy?
Well, half of them don't work. Here in California, and there's only, I think, 14 altogether air testing sites on the West Coast, EPA air testing sites. And the amount of, you know, what testing is going on is spot testing. They're not making a routine test of everywhere that it's rained, every gallon of milk, you know, every farm, every county. None of that's happening. We're just doing some spot checking.
Well, I heard they took away 11 of the monitors right there in Southern California where you've got those dangerous reactors. They said the readings were too high, or maybe they didn't work properly, but they took away some, and so you've got less already.
Yeah, they wanted to clean them or something.
Well, it's a good time to do it. You know, I should be without passion on this. I should be listening just to the science, I'm told. A couple of my pro-nuke people write me emails. Well, you should get back to the science, Alex. But I got to tell you, Ace, I am angry. I've just heard so many lies from the governments, from the nuclear lobby, and nobody was hurt at Chernobyl, they tell me. And then the Japanese minister, Adano, says no one's health has been hurt there either. My head hurts just trying to breathe through this information smog. How are you managing with that?
Well, it was decades ago that the scientific community agreed that the radiation has no threshold and that it's linear. Now, some people feel that it's worse than linear, and certainly there's an argument that particles of radiation embedded in your lungs is not the same as sunshine coming down on your, you know, dead layer of skin and your hair, which is counted as background radiation. So what's coming out of Fukushima is very, very dangerous. And we've known this forever, for decades and decades. As long as many people have been alive who are now in the industry, they should have known better. But instead, they still think a little radiation is good for you. I can't believe that we have to separate ourselves into those who think a little radiation is good for you and those who don't. But maybe, you know, instead of Democrats and Republicans and environmentalists and capitalists or whatever, we should realize that we've got a fundamental problem here. That some people just don't believe that radiation hurts you, and they're the ones that are in charge of poisoning all of us. The system can't be right. The theory can't be right. Nothing's right. I feel pretty bad.
Yeah, me too. You know, I can tell you that I actually interviewed uranium miners, this was back in the early 80s, who told me that uranium was good for them and that they'd just stick their little cups from their thermos down into some radioactive water and drink it for fun. And but a few years later, I wrote their obituaries because they died of various types of cancer. So I think I know where I stand on it. Is there another story you'd like to tell us?
Well, there's so many different cures for radiation. In Russia, they think that red wine might solve the problem, and everybody thinks that Ki is going to solve the problem, but Ki only blocks radioactive iodine. It doesn't block the cesium or the strontium or the tritium or anything else, the plutonium or the uranium. I guess the only thing I would really like to make sure people understand is that these poisons that are coming out of those reactors, and they're continuing to come out of those reactors, every single reactor can do that in a heartbeat. No matter what they tell you about how better their system is, it's not true. These were perfectly good systems run by perfectly good people, or so they thought.
And it went really wrong. This is Radio EcoShock. We've been talking with Ace Hoffman, an activist who's been warning us about nuclear blowouts for years. Find his blog at acehoffman.blogspot.com. And his YouTube video channel is just Ace Hoffman with two Fs. Thanks a lot for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith. Find this interview as a free MP3 and lots more at ecoshock.org. Meanwhile, the island of Japan feels more like a ship in rough seas than any sort of land at all, with hundreds of aftershocks at levels called major earthquakes anywhere else, with food and power shortages, regular life breaking down, fear for mothers, fear for parents, children afraid, a historic loss. I join you in sending my condolences not just for the tens of thousands who lost their lives, but the millions of citizens who must say a sad goodbye to the innocence of the old Japan, now passing into something new and unrecognizable. You and I will be passing there shortly. This is from The Voice of America on April 10th.
Around 3,000 people marched through central Tokyo, a large demonstration by Japanese standards. The demonstration was organized by eight civic groups to protest the Hamaoka nuclear power plant, which is located about 200 kilometers southwest of Tokyo.
My thanks to all listeners who sent in links, especially Carolyn Baker with her fine news service. Hear another new Fukushima song, After the 9.0 by Vastman at soundclick.com. This week you heard music clips from the new song Talking Endgame, It's the Radioactive Song by Dylan tribute artist Michelle Montecrosa. Find it on YouTube or use the link in my blog at ecoshock.info. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Radio EcoShock. Find links for this program, Fukushima Nuclear Mutiny, in my blog at ecoshock.info. Get tons of free audio MP3 downloads at our website, ecoshock.org. Until next week.